Gina Furtado is my guest in the second hour of today's program. Gina Furtado just finished about 3 years traveling around with Chris Jones and the Knight Drivers. She has now formed the Gina Furtado Project. We're going to talk to Gina about the brand new album under that band name, I Hope You Have a Good Life. It's on Mountain Home Music. I know you're going to like it. I've always been a big fan of Gina's. And now she's doing new and really fascinating stuff. Has a lot of thought behind what she does. Thanks so much for listening to Unreal Bluegrass. Gina Furtado. I am very happy to welcome back to Unreal Bluegrass, Gina Furtado. How are you, Gina?
I'm doing great. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing great. Listen, speaking of great, the Gina Furtado Project, I Hope You Have a Good Life, is just a great, fun, very, very musical album. I love everything about it. You've written some great songs. The playing is always great. You have great band members. I want to talk to you a little bit about the music, of course, but I also want to talk about this, I guess, is the first album while you were with Chris Jones and the Knight Drivers. You released True Colors.
Mm-hmm.
You were nominated 2018 as IBMA Banjo Player of the Year. You're no longer with Chris Jones, and now you've released this Gina Furtado project. And I wonder how much was informed from your travels. I think one of these songs sounds like a traveling song on the airplane.
Airplane ride.
Yeah, maybe that
definitely.
Was...
definitely from all the flying around for Chris's band.
Well, that's what I thought, even though they say they're night drivers. I suspect they get on the plane sometime. But so
yeah, we were flyers and day drivers.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So then the concept for this album and this particular band, and I want to make sure we mention all the people that play on the album because they're just some phenomenal players. But so
I agree.
Yeah, how long was this kind of, and by the way, it's on Mountain Home. How long has this been kind of bubbling around in your brain?
The album?
Yes.
This particular album? This one was much more fast-paced. True Colors, you know, was something I just kind of thought about for over the course of a couple years. And this one was just kind of, like, we just picked a recording date that was a couple months out. And we recorded, I think last November, by the way. So it's been in the can for a while.
So you were just
but
bursting.
Yeah, it was maybe 3-4 months out.
Yeah. You were holding all these back, and not the particular songs, but... But you do music that is yours, and you fit so well within that band setting, and you do music that's really, you know, I read about people trying to categorize, it's just great music and great playing, great musicianship.
Oh, thank you.
So I think it fits under that, so it's the Gina Furtado Project. Let me ask you this, do you feel like, and I don't know if it's my imagination, and I think about the True Colors and the things you've done with Chris Jones, do you feel like you're... On this album, and I don't mean this in a metaphor way, do you feel like you've found your voice? And I mean your actual singing voice. Does it seem like it's more upfront to you?
Oh, my singing voice. Well, it's something I've definitely worked on. You know, like when I recorded True Colors, that's another thing. I sang those songs because I'd written them. Like I wasn't singing at all before that. So... you know, I guess since the release of that album, I've just been touring around with it some and singing more. So getting more comfortable with singing instead of just being a sideman banjo player.
Well, and that's what
I
guess.
I love it.
Yeah, I'm having
a ton of fun with it.
I think you're having a blast with it, and I'm not being critical of other vocal efforts that you've made at all. I'm just saying when I listen to this over and over, I'm struck by the texture of your vocals and the energy and the way you express yourself. Not that you weren't before, but I just feel like you have a larger arsenal now. And maybe that's just my bad hearing. And again, not saying anything against what you did before vocally, but I just think that do you notice this, or is it just something I'm imagining? Do you feel like when you listen to yourself on this Gina Furtado project, do you feel like your vocals are a little more like in the forefront?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really glad to hear you say that because it is something that I've been working on and just kind of beginning to identify as not just a banjo player but also a vocalist. So, yeah, I really hadn't sung. Back when I made True Colors, I hadn't been singing. And then I guess I started writing more and wanting to sing what I wrote. So, yeah, so I've been really making that focus in my music nowadays.
Did that experience in the band with Chris Jones, did that I assume you learn from every day. And I think from listening to your music, you learn something every day and you try to express back to people that are listening things they can learn in little nuggets. So I assume you learned every day you were on with Chris Jones in the night, you learned something else either about composition or being part of that vocal effort. Do you feel like your music now and what you're writing and singing and playing is well informed by those 3 years? I can't see that it would be a detriment.
I think playing with Chris, that was my first real, like, job as a banjo player. Like, you know, when I started playing with Chris, that was when I started to become a musician for my livelihood, you know, a career musician. So, I think more than anything, it really just kind of gave me confidence. And I learned a lot about the business of being, you know, of being a musician from Chris and how to lead a band and, you know, book tours and all of that. So, yeah, absolutely. It was tremendously helpful.
And that's important, though, the whole part about leading the band and booking tours. That's a hard lesson to learn if you've not been exposed to it from just from people
right.
that I, because that's part of it. If you're out there, you're going to have to know where you're going next and how you're going to pay the band. And,
right,
and all those
right.
little logistics things, that's what I think Airplane, the second song, is just kind of funny to me. That it strikes me as that was part of your life at one point during the 3 years you were a member of the band.
Right. Right. Well, still is. I still have to wind up on airplanes, you know. Seems like it's just a musician thing. You wind up flying around and doing different gigs. And
that's what your life is. The first Pebble, there are a lot of music. There's a lot of music that you write that it's like overcoming, and it may not be major obstacles, but it's overcoming day-to-day events in life. Even if when you're at a place and somebody hasn't called you and they haven't shown up, you just get over that. And I think that's I'm drawing a blank on the name of it. Take Your Time.
Oh,
yeah.
The one when I was stood up on a date.
That's exactly
yes.
what it is. Yeah.
Yes.
So, all right, so that's a momentary, I'm getting over this, and it's a humorous way to approach it. But I feel like I get this tone from seeing you playing and hearing you singing and know what you're writing now, that a lot of these things are very positive. And even maybe even the name of the album, I hope you have a good life.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's something that I've just kind of realized about myself, that a lot of times when I'm having a hard time with something in my life, I write a song about how I want to respond to it, and that's how I start to respond that way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, so, I just kind of, when I put it, you know, in front of my face like that, I can see my song, and I can see, like, you know, how I want to behave about, you know, obstacles, then I can do it more easily.
Whereas I would not want to be the subject of Take Your Time, I'll Be Fine. I would like to be the subject of A Man Like That. That's a whole different flip side of that. It's like you're no longer waiting for the guy to call or whoever to show up, or if that's the guy, that could be a guy.
Yeah.
We were talking off the air before we got started about I love your playing and they're back to back. Prince Is in the Pea, and then you do a version of Story of an Artist. Prince Is in the Pea is instrumental.
Right.
And it's just absolutely, your banjo playing is not definable within a genre. You play music on your banjo, and you express what you want to express very well. And I think Prince Is in the Pea, you're going to have to do a YouTube thing or something where you show people how to play it so I can have a shot at learning.
Well, that one, I have always, I just love the sound of, like, Eastern European music, and I like to think, you know, that one is kind of inspired by some of that, I guess, kind of, like, klezmer-like sounds within, you know, and then I have, of course, beneath all of that is my Scruggs Foundation.
Yeah.
Yeah, that one was a really fun one to write and to record.
Before I ask you about any others, tell me about the people in the band.
Well, the people that recorded on the album, I had Nate Leith on fiddle, and I've known him forever and ever and ever, and Danny Nicely on mandolin, and same with, you know, him and Nate. I've just known them forever. Went to Galax Fiddlers Convention with those guys as a kid, and then Mark Fain on bass, and my pal Chris Luquette on guitar.
Listen, Chris Luquette to me, and I say this every time somebody mentions his name, is one of the greatest guitar players I've ever seen and ever met.
No, he's great. He's got that fiery energy that
he just can do it all.
To me, is like the most valuable.
You know, as much fun as Frank Sullivan and Dirty Kitchen is, he powers that as much as anybody in that band, and they're all virtuosos.
Yeah,
but I just think
I completely agree.
Chris is just phenomenal. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
So that's the band instrumentally, and then I had a few vocalists come in to do like backup vocals, like my sister Malia. Some backup vocals, and Brian McDowell did some harmony parts, and Chris Jones actually came in and did helped out on the Muppets song, which was Can You Picture That?
that's a very funky tune, but yeah, I get what you're saying. Yeah.
yeah, I've always, you know, the Muppets make some of the greatest music ever, if you ask me. So had to cover them.
It's hard to cover them too because they do the originals so well.
Yeah.
The story of an artist. There's been so many versions. Of course, the original author Daniel Johnson. Did he just die not long ago?
He did. Yeah, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, and story of the artist is one of those very simple and things he was known for doing. It's like you couldn't have said it any better. But it's you and your banjo.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Yeah, I have this idea in my head that I would like to cover, like one artist per album that I ever make. Maybe I'll stick to it, maybe I won't. I hope I do, but just as like a nod of appreciation to someone who is truly, like, and as far as I can see, just truly connected to their music, like truly self-expressive. And I think Daniel Johnston was that way, and then on True Colors I did a Nina Simone cover.
Yeah, I remember talking
about
that
way.
Oh gosh.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, there's something about his music and her music that I just like I just find it like astounding, like how expressive they are.
And I go back. I don't want to keep beating you on this, but your vocal on Story of an Artist, and of course the banjo. You, let's put it this way, you accompany yourself very well, and usually that's a compliment I would give to an instrumentalist accompanying a singer. But you play behind yourself so well, and the music is so simple and true, and but your playing behind it is just. It's what you would want as a singer for someone to play behind you, and you're doing it behind yourself.
Well, thanks. Yeah, it was a bit of a challenge to come up with, to do something that was only banjo. But I liked the simplicity of it and kind of the loneliness of it, having one instrument. You know,
yeah, very lonely.
So I really wanted to do that, and Daniel Johnston did it with just the piano.
Yeah.
So it was like kind of I wanted to emulate that somewhat, but. Yeah, I had to come up with a way that worked on the banjo. So it was fun.
Is the album out? I know I have it. I got it early. Is it out yet? Is there a release date?
It came out last week.
Okay, actually. Good. Mm-hmm. Are you having fun with this new project?
Oh, my gosh, so much fun. We went on our first, we've been playing kind of here and there for a couple of years since True Colors came out. But we did our first real tour as a full-time band this past week and just had a blast. And I'm so thrilled to have the musicians on board that I do. I think they're just totally awesome.
I'm sure there's a website. I'm not saying this to say goodbye, but I know there's a website where people can find you and where you're going to be and find this music and True Colors and all the other things you participated in. So you get to tell me what it is.
Sure, yeah. It's ZenaFurtadoBanjo.com.
Okay.
I've got all our tour dates and
are there dates
all of that.
Booked on
all
there
that
now?
Fun stuff. There's some dates.
Well, this is great. By the way, I always loved, and as I look at the photograph, I think I see, and correct me if I'm wrong here. Do you have amber buttons on some of your tuners? You do.
Oh yeah, I did. I actually just got a new banjo, which I'm super excited about. But in the picture, I have. I was playing in a Gibson RB3, and that had amber tuners on it.
I always liked those amber tuners. What are you playing now, then?
I just began endorsing Pruka banjos, and I got this amazing lightweight banjo custom-made from Yarda, and it's just, oh, man, I'm still getting used to it. I just picked it up at IBMA, but it is Absolutely, just stunning.
So for the non-banjo players, describe lightweight, because if they play, they know that banjos are kind of heavy after a while. So when you say lightweight on this Pruka banjo, what describe for the listeners what you're talking about.
Well, like the, you know, like my Gibson RB3, pretty much any like higher quality banjo is going to have a big, heavy tone ring inside, which just, makes it sound great, but it really, I think it was having long-term negative effects on my back, because I'm not a huge person, you know, so carrying around this banjo as much as I do was not a good thing. So the lightweight is just, you know, built with that in mind to try to keep down on that, keep it as light as possible. I believe the artist has a tone ring, but it's just made in such a way that it's not quite as heavy as a typical banjo.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, several years ago, a guy named Tony Pass came out with these tone rings that you could actually not have, not tone rings, the shells, you could actually not have a tone ring. And depending on how they were set up, and of course they weighed comparatively next to nothing, and the sound was there, which made all the players think, well, what were we doing with that 20-pound tone ring in there all these years? But so I guess it must be just the skill and assembling them and engineering them, because you're telling me that even though there's a tone ring in this Pruka and it's a lighter weight, that you're happy with the sound, you're getting all the sound that you want.
Absolutely, yeah. I've tried a few, you know, over the years. I've been kind of on the hunt for a lighter one, and I just, you know, a lot of times it does kind of loses something when they try to make it a lightweight. Something is lost, but I'm so happy with this one. I just think it sounds as good as and better than most vintage banjos I've ever played.
It's got, and for people listening, I'm talking to Gina Furtado, and now we're talking nuts and bolts and all sorts of things about
banjo.
And
I'm not a huge banjo geek.
That's okay.
I like playing the banjo.
I understand. So what it makes me think then that, you know, I go back to the early mid 70s when everything JD did, if he had a shaved bridge, we all shaved the bridge. If he had a real droopy head, we'd all loosen our. So we were always looking for this magical sound, which I think is more from what you're telling me and from what I'm learning over the years, is really more. You have to have a decent instrument. You have to have a decent way of compensating for not having that massive hunk of metal. But I also think it's in the hands and the ears and the heads of the players.
Oh, for sure. You know, yeah, I know. There's only so much you can buy. You know, there's only so much like good sound you can buy, because a lot of it is just practice. I see this in students a lot, where it's like, well, maybe if I buy this, you know, some other expensive apparatus to practice on, or you know, and it, you know. Really, it comes down to just practicing, but having a great instrument.
You have
sure
to have,
makes that easier.
You know, you have to have a playable instrument. If I don't know, well, my first was a K, and I didn't know any better, and it actually was like an inch and a half high, but I didn't know.
Right? Oh, yeah.
It was supposed to be that way.
I started with one of those.
So it's like, I'm kind of getting this, and then I moved up to another mediocre, but it was actually had some better features to it, and I thought, this is how it's supposed to play? And then, of course, but at some point you're done as far as the ease of actually fingering it and playing it with your
right
hand. And you're right, that you have students. You're a teacher, right?
Yeah, I teach quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Camps and private lessons.
Yeah, so it winds up being the amount of time. You can teach a student so much, but really it is, and you would know this from the level you've reached, that it's practicing.
It is certainly, yeah.
And playing.
Practicing. And refining your skills. Although I have to say, it's kind of amazing, like with this new Pruka banjo I have, it's so responsive. You know, I've kind of learned to, even though my old Gibson RB3 was a nice instrument, I had to work a little harder for certain techniques, you know, technical type things, like slides and pull-offs, like, had to work a little harder for them. And with the Pruka, it's just so, like, responsive. I'm kind of, like, becoming more aware of where I need to refine my skills and techniques.
On the new album, you have very and I now that we're talking about this, I forgot the passage that I thought your pull-offs were just so understated and perfect and well and easy to hear. And I don't remember, and I'll never remember. But you have the left hand. You have a very accurate, we'll say, an efficient, economical left hand playing. And do you play? And we'll finish this bit of this geeky stuff about the banjo. It sounds to me like you're not if we talk about the old way of, you know, you play close to the bridge, it sounds to me like you're further away from the bridge on a lot of the stuff on this album.
You know, I move around a lot.
Yeah, okay, that's
around,
the best way.
Yeah, I move, like, yeah, I'm not, like, super close to the bridge ever. I don't like it to be abrasive sounding. But, yeah, I just kind of move around. I think there's different tones you can get all around the head of the banjo. So I try to do that in my playing. Yeah.
I think that, you know, if you learn from Earl's book, and here you move here for this, and you move here for this, and that the two spots, you can even see it on the heads of banjo players that learn that style. It's all really messed up close, and then it's all really messed up by the neck. I mean, by the bridge. But I really think that players like you, you described it well. You move around a lot. You're looking for, like on the story of an artist, you're moving around, I think, a lot on that to get the right tone and the right sound behind that very expressive lyric. And I just think you have that freedom.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you have that freedom to do that, and it comes off so well.
Well, thanks, yeah. I mean, we have, like, we make a big deal about anchoring, and that by that I mean, like, like place your mm-hmm. ring or pinky finger on the head of the banjo and leave it there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that kind of, like, stabilizes your hand. So, yeah, so, like, you still want to kind of anchor. Oh, this is what I do anyway. I try to keep a finger down, but also just still be able to move around so that you're stabilized and you can still get all these different tones that, you know, that the banjo has to offer.
Oh, you
like,
get, you
why
you,
waste them?
Yeah, that's right. They're all there. Why waste them? I enjoy this album so much, Gina, and I've always enjoyed your playing since I became more aware of you in the last four or five years, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But the album, again, is the Gina Furtado Project, and I hope you have a good life, and that's what that's the name of the album. It's on Mountain Home.
Thank you.
All the tunes, the funky ones and all the other tunes are except for the guy who's too dumb to come to the bar or can't call because he's too busy. They're all just very, and I don't know that you try to do this, but I think it's part of your attitude toward life. I don't mean to overanalyze this, but I think they're all sort of uplifting and overcoming, and maybe that's an obvious statement. I don't know.
Well, I think it is just kind of, my life philosophy. So it comes out in my playing.
Yeah.
In my writing, I should say.
Yeah, okay, great. Well, thanks so much for taking time to chat with me. And
thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All the best. We'll find you down the road somewhere. And check out the new band. It looks great. The lineup is great. And I hope this album does very well.
Thank you. All I appreciate you calling me in, Steve. All right. Have a good one.
Thanks, Gina. Bye. All right.